Lavinia Greenlaw. Greenlaw's a novelist and a poet. She's also the author of a memoir called The Importance of Music to Girls. Greenlaw talked to N. Strange Champs about how music helped her as she grew up. Greenlaw began by reading an excerpt from her book.
In the car, we needed music in order to feel how fast we were going. And for these boys, that meant heavy metal. Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Black Sabbath, all juggernaut bass lines and skidding lead guitar breaks. The volume turned up so high that a song would lose shape and I would feel rather than hear it. Everything shook. The car, my body, and the world outside, as if by sheer force of sound we could make every empty church, closed shop, locked gate, and lurking police car rattle and vibrate until they came apart and the world was nothing but parts, all up in the air. Too young to bring about change, we brought about disturbance. Heavy metal was our engine noise. It was trucks on the cricket pitch, bulldozers tearing up the green, boots stomping on flower beds, cars driven through hedges, the only thing that could tear a hole in the silence of a Sunday afternoon. Sometimes the boy driving turned on the radio and we girls would sing along to some anthem from our disco nights, which was crackly and distorted, as if it had rushed too fast across space. I can't live if living is without you. Now it was not so much a song as a continuum, a booming tunnel of desire through which we flew like static. In the dark, music was our landscape as much as our map. The real daylight map was less interesting than its contortions might suggest. There are no proper hills in Essex, and so we were like the Dutch who used to have to climb a church tower in order to see the view. We lived in a world that was two-thirds sky. How to get up in the air? One night, Robbie drove us to the top of a multi-story car park. He turned up Black Sabbath and then raced down the narrow switchback of the exit ramp. He threw the car around each corner as if the ramp were nothing but corners, and we swerved and swerved, almost bouncing off the concrete walls. Was I scared? No. I remember it as a moment of pure pleasure, driven and held by the blast of that music, which had propelled us like a rocket through the exosphere until we broke through gravity and were nothing more than sound in space.
You write so beautifully about the way music, especially when you're a teenager, can become a kind of separate space, a landscape, a frontier into which kids can escape.
I think for many teenagers like me, it was more real than the landscape I was in. And it was a landscape I could, to some extent, control or make more sense of than I could everything that was really going on.
I'm curious about the title of the book, The Importance of Music to Girls, which sort of implies that the experience of music for girls is different than it is for boys. Do you think that's true?
I wish I hadn't called the book this because...
Tired of answering that question?
I think I thought that the oblique relation that I see between the title and what's inside the book would be obvious, and it really isn't. Because it's not a polemic about gender, or it doesn't really assert anything about gender. It's about becoming yourself. And for me, it was about trying to be a girl, thinking I didn't have to be a girl, and then deciding after all that being a girl wasn't a bad thing. So that felt important. It felt important to make a distinction that I found very difficult to deal with, which was that I was the only girl hanging out in the record shop talking about labels and producers, and my girlfriends were really not that interested in music at that level. And when a boy talked to me about music, I thought he wanted me to talk back. So I would make these terrible mistakes. If a boy mentioned Joy Division, who were produced by someone called Martin Hannett, I would say, yes, and what's really fascinating is how he cuts off the digital delay on each drum beat so it sounds like a kind of exploding heartbeat. And of course, they didn't want me to say that. They wanted me to listen to them. They wanted to show music to me. It's the difference that's there in all kinds of expertise and authority at that age where everyone's kind of showing off their plumage. I didn't understand that for a long time. And I also didn't understand that while girls use music very overtly to explore feeling, boys tend, if we are to generalize, to categorize and analyze and treat it as a form of classification, taxonomy, whatever.
Almost as a way to control feeling.
Well, exactly. That's what I realized, that they were using it to deal with feelings too.
Just to sort of tamp down the feelings, whereas
girls would
use the music to amplify the feelings.
I guess, yes, I think.
Just speaking gross generalizations.
Yes, but it's horribly true, isn't it?
Yes. You do have a lovely passage, though. I was going to ask you to read it, about a specific memory of sitting around in mixed company, boys and girls, just sitting and listening to music. And I think anybody who loved music as a teenager has a memory, surely, something like this. Could you read the passage called The White Room, Part 2?
Sure. It was a small flat above a shop, but the living room, entirely white with a deep white carpet, seemed vast. I remember no details, no chairs or pictures or windows, just this whiteness and softness, and a stereo of such power and clarity that I felt as if the music I listened to at home must be a shriveled version of itself. Here, that music was lushly rehydrated. We four, two boys and two girls, each sat against a separate wall, relaxed and apart, not drinking, but sharing a joint. And I realized that I was in a room with boys and music, but nothing was meant to happen. Nick played soul, songs I'd listened to while dancing, flirting, crying, studying, or putting on makeup. Even when I was doing nothing, I was still not really listening, still thinking about something else. As a rule of thumb, rock was for boys and disco was for girls, but soul was a place we might meet. America was still far away, and English soul was like English jazz or disco, unconvincing. Soul was Marvin Gaye, Otis Redding, Aretha Franklin, Eddie Floyd, Teddy Pendergrass, Wilson Pickett, Percy Sledge. In England, these would have been the names of priests, gardeners, farmers, teachers, and grandparents, but coming from America wiped them of association. What these people looked like, how old they were, their names meant nothing. Soul was about voice and authenticity, and to us, these were real singers and this real music, a serious pleasure. I was already serious about music, by which I mean I didn't have to think about whether or not to listen to it. It was part of the day's machine. Despite this, at 14 I had rarely concentrated, as I did that night in the white room over the shop, for once not using music in order to feel things. The song I remember from that evening is not in the end Otis Redding or Wilson Pickett, not even Real Soul. But Earth, Wind and Fire's That's the Way of the World, a ballad so shrewdly orchestrated that it can balance one teetering hyperbole on top of another. I'm still not tired of listening to it and think this has to do with its expanse. In that room, it went on forever, not in terms of time, but space. It filled the white room with space, so that I was further and further away from everyone else and deeper into the blank realm of pure happiness. As soon as the music ended and someone spoke, I would have to step back outside.
Now, you grew up at a time when music was changing enormously, going through huge waves of revolution. The punk rock movement began when you were a teenager. Do you remember the first punk rock song you heard, or one of the first? What did you think of it?
It would have been the Sex Pistols, I think, on TV. I remember certain moments. I remember this Sex Pistols interview on TV where they were goaded by this rather seedy old presenter, goaded into swearing and misbehaving and therefore causing a scandal. Well, there was an odd moment when Mark Bolan had a show and he was still very kind of in his glam hippie mode. So he's sitting there with ringlets and a pink shirt and he introduced the Jam, and suddenly there were these three very young men in suits playing this really austere, speeded up sound. And it just felt very strange to realise that something was happening that you didn't expect and couldn't explain, but it set off a reverberation that went absolutely right through you. And someone like me, I just thought, this is for me. It took me a while to get there, but I just thought, this is for me.
What was it about punk that appealed so much?
I think for people like me who felt out of place and at odds with themselves and kind of abrasive, this sound that was all those things, that was out of place, abrasive and at odds with itself, was like an expression of exactly how you felt inside. It was like somebody saying to you, I understand how you feel. And the aesthetic of punk relieved me from this desperate ambition to be a girl. So I just cut all my own hair off and threw away my disco clothes and started to look kind of like a boy. And I found it incredibly liberating.
Lavinia Greenlaw is the author of The Importance of Music to Girls. She spoke with Anne Strainchamps.